This week on Making Contact.
I'm here because the United States invaded my country in 1965.
It's not just jobs and prosperity that draw immigrants to the United States. Many Latin Americans were brought here by dangerous or deadly conditions, and the U.S. often had a role in creating those crises.
From the very beginning, the West depended for its labor on Mexicans.
Over the next 2 weeks, we'll hear Harvest of Empire, a documentary film written and narrated by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez. Today, in part one, Gonzalez traces the history of Guatemalan, Dominican, and Mexican migration to the United States. I'm Andrew Stelzer, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information.
Once again, the streets of our country were taken over today by people who don't belong here. America's illegal aliens are becoming ever bolder. March through our streets and demand your rights. Excuse me, you have no rights here. At some point, this could all turn very violent as Americans become fed up with the failure of their government to address the most pressing domestic issue of our time.
The reality is that America is changing. By the end of this century, a majority of the people living in the United States will trace their origins not to Europe, but to Latin America. That's an enormous transformation in the actual composition of the nation. And unless we all understand how that happened, we will not be able to deal with the inevitable conflicts that come from ignorance between racial and ethnic groups in the America of the 21st century. As a journalist, since I'd covered Latino communities across the country now for more than 30 years, and interviewed its leaders and had a sense of how those communities had been built, I felt that I should at least try to chronicle the story, because the reality is that there's a reason why there are so many Mexicans, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, Salvadorans in the United States, because really the major migrations come precisely from those countries that the United States once dominated and even occupied.
If you had to pick one date where U.S. foreign policy towards Latin America went wrong, the date would be 1954 and the place Guatemala.
Robert White is the former U.S. ambassador to El Salvador.
That was the beginning of this terrible, terrible attitude that the United States developed towards Latin America, and particularly towards Central America, where change became our enemy.
Guatemala fue tremendo.
Guatemala was unbelievable. 200,000 dead that we have accounted for, more than 50,000 missing.
Más de 50,000 desaparecidos.
Rigoberta Menchú, Guatemalan political activist and 1992 Nobel Peace Prize winner.
83% of the disappeared and executed were Mayans. The pain is too strong. Our people will never be able to forget it.
Nunca lo va a olvidar.
Guatemala was one of the few countries in Latin America that after World War II actually experienced a period of democratic rule.
President Jacobo Arbenz was determined to reduce widespread poverty by effecting major land reform in Guatemala. Only 2% of the owners controlled 75% of the arable land, and of all those, the United Fruit Company was the largest, with some 600,000 acres of property.
It was such a powerhouse, owning its own railroads, its own shipping lines. It really was more powerful than any government throughout most of the 20th century. In fact, Latin America became the incubator for all the great American multinational companies. Two of the key principals in the U.S. government are John Foster Dulles, who was the Secretary of State under President Eisenhower. His brother, Alan Dulles, who was the head of the CIA, had both been law partners in the main law firm that represented United Fruit Company.
Former CIA Division Chief Melvin Goodman.
The feeling was we could very easily overthrow this progressive government and make it a lot easier for the United Fruit Company and other American businesses to operate in Central America.
The CIA got heavily involved in managing public opinion. It created the image of Arbenz as a crazy radical. And it was a systematic effort, mobilization and financing of opposition forces, until the Arbenz government was overthrown. A vicious repression of all progressives and supporters of the Arbenz government ensued. Guatemala really began to establish a new pattern whereby the United States government used covert operations, employed local proxies to destabilize and overthrow governments in the region.
It's a great day for the liberation leader as the populace demonstrates its joy at being rescued from the tyranny that prevailed during the communist regime of ousted President Jacobo Arbenz Guzman. The end of the Civil War, and more important, the end of another attempt by the Kremlin to get a foothold in the New World.
After the overthrow, you have the beginnings of a civil war. People were picked up on the streets in the middle of the night, kidnapped, assassinated. You had the growth of a guerrilla war and of the government's efforts at counterinsurgency. As the rebels retreated into the countryside, they built up a very big support among the Mayan and Canjobal people who had always been discriminated against by the Guatemalan government. The Civil War really went from about the 1960s to the 1980s. And as it escalated, the government responded with resettlement campaigns and a genocidal war against the Indians.
Yo salí de Guatemala después del que quemaron vivo mi padre en la embajada de España.
I left Guatemala after they burned my father alive in the Spanish embassy. They were asking for political asylum from the Spanish government. In an attempt to save their lives, they entered the embassy.
Salvar sus vidas, entraron en la embajada. Y en ese momento las fuerzas de seguridad de Guatemala atacaron la embajada.
But at that moment, the Guatemalan security forces attacked the embassy.
Los quemaron vivos. A todos.
They burned everyone alive.
Realmente ningún sobrevivió.
No one survived. Not the farmers or the students. No one who was there.
De la gente que estaba allí. En Guatemala, si lo que hay es persecución, es...
If what exists in Guatemala is persecution, murder, killing, if what you have is insecurity, then I prefer to cross the border and go to a place where I feel safer.
Frontera e ir donde sentiré más seguridad.
Mariana Cabrera, Guatemalan immigrant and mother.
Los estadounidenses no tienen idea de por qué uno se viene a los Estados Unidos. No la tienen.
People in the U.S. have no idea why we come to this country. No idea. And if they do, it's probably the wrong idea.
Y fue bien difícil dejarla. Fue duro.
It was very difficult to leave her. She was only 4 years old. She didn't understand that her mother was leaving and wouldn't be there when she woke up. Leaving your children is not easy. To come here, the price you pay is incredibly high. Too high.
No tiene precio. No tiene precio.
Mariana Zamboni is Mariana Cabrera's daughter.
I was almost 7 years old when I came to LA to be reunited with my mother because she left Guatemala 3 or 4 years before I did. It was a very long trip. It was by bus, it was by car, by walking many, many miles. Going through the southern part of Mexico is one of the toughest parts. When it came to crossing the border, I had to say that the coyote was my father and that my grandmother was my mother. And we were coming to visit. The immigration officer asked me, like, what's your mom's name? And I said, Aura. That he asked me for my father's name, and I forgot. I forgot his name. Luckily, we were not sent back to Guatemala. We were not able to cross to the U.S. that first time because of my fault. But my grandmother is a person with a lot of persistence and a lot of tenacity, and she's like, no, we're gonna try again. In January 27, 1991, I came to L.A. All I remember is seeing this really big pregnant woman running down the stairs, and I was worried that she was gonna fall off the stairs. And she lifted me up and she carried me and she was kissing me a lot. It was definitely very emotional. I think to some extent I did feel like a stranger. Like I think that I'm like, why is this woman hugging me so hard? And I was happy, but I was also, I think, to some extent confused of what's really going on. I think about that often, and I think that my children will be the, hopefully will be the first ones that don't, there won't be a separation, you know, that I will be able to have my children and won't need to migrate, you know, to survive.
Okay, Nana.
Grandma did come undocumented, and then my mom came undocumented. I also came undocumented, and it took us over close to 20 years to be able to fix our status.
When you're from Guatemala and you come to the U.S., your plan is not to stay in the U.S.
No. Pero cuando vienes aquí es otra historia.
But when you get here, it's a different story. And it's even harder when you're here illegally. Much more difficult. It's amazing. It's incredible to me. In Guatemala, I didn't even know Harvard existed.
This is my diploma from Harvard University. Yeah, I can't believe it's my name in it.
Mariana Zamboni.
I think that my mom was given the opportunities to have achieved her educational dreams. She would have gone to Harvard. I believe she's a fighter.
Declassified documents show the CIA was directly involved in training Guatemalan death squads. Hundreds of mass grave sites have been unearthed since the end of the Guatemalan Civil War. During the 1980s, less than 2% of Guatemalan applicants were granted political asylum in the U.S. More than 1 million Guatemalans now live in the United States. We'll be right back. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 510-251-1332, extension 108. Because of listeners like you, this show is distributed for free to radio stations in the U.S., Canada, Australia, and South Africa. To find out how to support us, download shows, or get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. We now return to Harvest of Empire, a documentary film narrated by Juan Gonzalez.
The American nation cannot, must not, and will not permit the establishment of another communist government in the Western Hemisphere.
I'm here because the United States invaded my country in 1965, an illegal invasion, completely trumped up excuse to invade the Dominican Republic and crush our democratic hopes.
Pulitzer Prize winning author Juno Diaz.
We've lived the consequences of that illegal invasion politically, economically, and in the bodies of the people who were wounded, the bodies of the people who were killed. We've been living it for over 40 years.
There have been two major U.S. occupations of the Dominican Republic. The first was in 1916. The U.S. Army trained a new Dominican National Guard. It handpicked a former railway security officer, Rafael Trujillo, to lead that guard. And Trujillo then uses the power of the military to seize control of the government.
He was like the most horrific imagination of this terrifying dictator. He would disappear Dominican and American citizens and kill them with impunity.
He basically ruled the Dominican Republic for 30 years with absolute, total control. He routinely kidnapped and assaulted the wives, even of his supporters. And throughout his career, made it extremely easy for American companies to do business in the Dominican Republic, but was a savage, savage dictator. Eventually, even the United States government could not stomach his methods of operation, so the CIA joined with disgruntled military officers to back his assassination.
For the first time in 30 years, the people of the Dominican Republic are breathing the sweet air of liberty, and the streets are jammed in celebration. Mataron al Chivo en la carretera. Mataron al Chivo en la carretera. Déjenmelo ver, déjenmelo ver, déjenmelo ver. Mataron al Chivo y no me lo dejaron.
In 1963, you have the election of Juan Bosch. He was a liberal, a social democrat, who attempted to institute new social reforms. But the Bosch government didn't last for very long. Only a few months into his term in office, there was a military coup. That military coup in turn spurred a popular insurrection that led to the U.S. invasion of the Dominican Republic in 1965. When the rebels finally agreed to lay down their arms, the United States government scheduled new elections. But it also allowed the right-hand man of Trujillo, Joaquin Balaguer, to run in those elections for president. Balaguer won that election. The problem was that there was enormous repression against the Bosch forces, killings on an almost daily basis. So the United States then began allowing large numbers of Dominican former rebels to come to the United States as a way, again, of using migration as a safety valve. Thousands of Dominicans started coming to New York City.
Well, they said we're coming to the United States, whatever that meant. I thought we were just going up the road to some mystical place. When I finally saw a map in kindergarten, how far we had traveled, I remember being not only astonished, but literally terrified. My father was a standard kind of crazy Latino military guy who would check his children's hands and their shoes and their clothes and their hair before we left the house. I mean, we had to tie our shoes a certain way. I lived in what I call the little dictatorship, the little dictatorship of our house. When I immigrated to New Jersey, it was a very crazy time. I immigrated in 1974, a few months before the fall of Saigon. This was not a place that was very welcoming. I found myself facing a tremendous amount of racism and bigotry, but not just from like white Americans, from black Americans and from Latinos. I think if every immigrant child in this country was allowed to tell the real emotional truth of their experience here, people in the United States would discover that we actually make immigration a more horrific experience than it needs to be. And I feel that as a country, we're in a dream where there are no mistakes, there is no evil, we are always good, we hurt no one. You know, you can't grow if you admit no mistakes.
All those hundreds and thousands that sneak into our country that could be diseased.
Illegal immigrants are attacking our culture and our way of life.
They are the most extreme elements in this country want open borders.
The process of migration transforms people so that they end up being not only strangers in the land they've come to, they also become estranged to some degree from the land they left. Migration creates this limbo itself of a new identity that is ni aquí ni allá, neither here nor there.
Rafael Trujillo protected U.S. sugar interests by arresting and torturing Dominican labor organizers. At the time of his assassination, Trujillo was one of the richest men in the world. More than 1.5 million Dominicans live in the U.S.
Of course, you really can't tell the story of Latinos in America without dealing with the Mexican population, because Mexicans are by far the largest group of the Latino population in the United States. Most people are not aware that since 1820, when the United States first started gathering immigration statistics, there has been no nation in the world that has sent more people to the United States than Mexico, and we're talking about legal immigration. More legal Mexican immigrants have come to this country since 1820 than the Irish, than the Germans, than the French, than any other population. The reality is that great swaths of the United States and the West were originally part of Mexico. California, Nevada, parts of Utah, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado. That was all the northern territory of Mexico, and there were Mexican citizens living on that land before it became part of the United States. As they say in South Texas or in northern New Mexico, southern Colorado, we didn't cross the border crossed us.
Mexico was quite aware that the U.S. was coming.
Historian and political analyst Lorenzo Meyer.
And that they were willing to expand themselves everywhere possible, especially in those areas of North America that formerly belonged to Spain, then to Mexico, but were empty, almost empty. It was a very tempting piece of land there. Mexico City said, well, we cannot really defend the northern part of our new republic unless we have a demographic push there. But we don't have enough people in Mexico to fill that empty space. Why don't invite foreigners? Why don't invite Catholic foreigners? the Irish that were already coming to the US. Let us receive them with open arms. But at the end, they were not Irish. They were not Catholic, and they brought the slaves.
Most of the settlers who moved into Texas came from the southern states. Many of them were slave owners themselves. So they naturally saw Texas as an area for expansion of slavery in America. But as more Americans moved into Texas, they suddenly began confronting the reality that the Mexican government had abolished slavery. The admission of Texas and then the Mexican-American War that followed is really a war to expand slavery in America. It was a short but vicious war. Once General Scott captures Mexico City and other U.S. troops occupy California, New Mexico, and the other northern territories of Mexico, the big question arises, how much of this territory is the United States going to keep?
Why did they decide to go back? The possibilities of contamination, physical as well as cultural contamination, could be a real danger for the U.S. So let us move out of Mexico. Let us move out of the territory in which we can find Mexicans. We don't want a Mexico with Mexicans.
Eventually, Congress decides to absorb as much territory as possible with the fewest people, but that leaves few hands to mine the resources. From the very beginning, the West depended for its labor on Mexicans. So that our wealth and prosperity here is not only due to the labor of the original settlers, but is also due to those Americans who were conquered. Then comes the Depression. Unemployment skyrockets. A furor arises over competition by Mexican labor for jobs, and the Hoover administration initiates a massive deportation program. As many as 1 million Mexicans were just loaded onto trains and shipped out of the country. Some estimates are that as many as 60% of those deported were actually American citizens. There's been a pattern now for the last 100 years of Mexicans being recruited into the country and then shipped back out of the country. Recruited into the country, shipped back out of the country. The reality is that it's two countries but one economy. The Mexicans function as a reserve labor force in good times in America and as an expendable labor force in the bad times.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. You've been listening to part one of Harvest of Empire, written and narrated by Juan Gonzalez. Tune in next week for excerpts of the second part of the film. For a CD copy of this program, call the National Radio Project at 510-251-1332, extension 108, or check out our website, radioproject.org, to get a podcast, download past shows, or make a difference by supporting our work. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. I'm Andrew Stelzer. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.